The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
It might be hour two, and I may be speaking to Douglas Lamb about men and the Me Too movement for the rest of this hour. But right now, I continue my conversation with our friend Kevin McCullough. Kevin, people can go to townhall.com to check out your stuff. Also, The Binge Thinker. People need to find you. You're really one of these people that you get a lot of stuff that is... I don't know how to put it exactly, but you're in the weeds. You understand some things that I've never really been good at understanding, and it's valuable, very valuable, to get your point of view. Since I'm talking about parochial things and being in the weeds, what about Curtis Sliwa for the next mayor of New York City?
Oh, well, now we're talking about real change, right? So there's no deeper blue place than New York State, and there's no deeper city that's deeper blue in New York City than New York State than New York City is itself. And Curtis Sliwa, for people that are listening across the country, he's the founder of the Guardian Angels, which I think they have chapters in 300 cities worldwide, 120 nations, something like that. But a real remarkable character in New York. You always can spot him. He's got his red beret and sateen jacket on wherever he goes. But a real fighter, a real fighter for the belief that truth and justice still matter. And when you're talking about a city that has fundamentally imploded over the last year between the mismanagement of the state with COVID-19, the mismanagement of the economy with de Blasio and Cuomo, we need definitive change in leadership. And I think he would make a great mayor. There may be some others that put their hats forward that would do it as well. But part of the reason that we're seeing what we're seeing in Washington, D.C., Eric, is connected to New York. And let me just go on a brief tangent here to connect these dots. New York has a matching program of taxpayer money for elections, where if you raise a certain amount, they will give you 8-1 taxpayer funds for your campaign. This only helps incumbents, by the way, and it helps to continue a partisan incumbentry long beyond what it would normally do if it was just up to the appetites of the voters, because the money is so big that if candidates coming in from the other side or from a different perspective have a hard time getting to the threshold, and then they don't get any of the matching dollars that taxpayers are paying for. I don't think my money as a taxpayer should be used to help elect Mayor Bill de Blasio, but that would happen if I was a resident of Manhattan. Nancy Pelosi introduced legislation last week to bring that same technique through H.R. 1 into the electoral process for the country.
I've never thought of Nancy Pelosi as evil, because, you know, I may disagree with people. I may disagree strongly with them. But I have to tell you, what I am seeing now from her and from the other Democratic leadership, it is wicked. It is as un-American as anything we have ever seen, but more.
And it's been nothing but a waterfall cascading of it too. It's not been like a little drip. It's been a nonstop barrage, and every piece of executive order that they've put out, every piece of legislation that they've proposed has all kinds of attacks against not only freedom, but the citizens of this country, the ability to self-determine our elections, the ability to treat men and women equally and allow them to have their own privacy. If you have a daughter that's going into high school or college in the next few years, you're going to be shocked at what this administration actually wants them to be exposed to. And by exposed, you can read that to mean as dirty as you want to, because they are fine with putting biological males in your daughter's locker room. This is how far gone. And they're doing it this fast, Eric, because they know their window of opportunity. Trump was so successful in his 4 years at starting to turn the tide that when they took power, they said, we can't sit on our duff for even one day. We've got to start just through executive order, changing everything we can. Now, there's some good news here. The courts are starting to bite back. 12 states sued Biden yesterday for climate change stuff that he's put into executive orders. And you've got more states that are going to jump on board on the determination of whether or not biological males should be in women's locker rooms. You're going to get some of these things adjudicated, by the way, in court, in courts that Donald Trump switched the worldview of because he got 300 judges in during his time. Not all is lost, but the attack is so hard. And the shotgun, the shells of the shotgun are so multiple, and they're coming all at the same time. You can't dodge all of them. You can't deflect all of them. We've got to get a full-fledged army motivated, activated, busy, going in the other direction. We have to speak to our neighbors. We've got to tell people what some of these legislative things mean. We've got to engage the conversation, and we have to, from a common sense perspective, not a partisan perspective, but a common sense perspective, talk about truth, talk about the reality. My wife's hairdresser 2 weeks ago, she's sitting there getting her hair done, and they're having a conversation about their daughters in school. And she said, "Are you ready for your daughter to be have boys in her locker room in high school in a couple of years?" And the hairdresser, who voted for Biden because she just didn't think that Trump was very nice, that was really the end of the rationale that she gave it, was shocked. And she said, "This wasn't what I voted for. Actually, people, it was."
Yes, it was.
It was.
Oh, yes, it was. For. We tried to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, we tried. You called us white nationalists and all kinds of mean things, meaner than anything Trump ever called me. I got to tell you, it's really crazy. Kevin, you're very encouraging. You're the kind of husband I've been looking for. No, it's kind of funny because women always say, like, he's so comforting. Or so I just think to myself, you've been so reassuring to me right now that I'm going to propose marriage when we go off the air. But it is important for us to listen to voices that know how to reassure us, that don't give us false information. And you're doing that. And it's one of the reasons that it's important to me that people know you, because we need to know where to look. And folks like you and me are getting canceled. I was knocked off Twitter for 12 hours again. They keep knocking me off for a week. Then it was a day. And then it was and I thought to myself, what did I say? I have no idea what I said last night at some point that made them knock me off Twitter. Honestly, I actually don't know. But we're living in crazy times. And those of us who are being canceled, I say this to my audience, and I'll be saying it like every day at some point. You need to support the people who are being canceled. You need to support the people that are being hurt, or they're trying to hurt them. Mike Lindell right behind me, if you're watching this on video, I tell people, just because, go to his website, use the code Eric, just because when people come after someone, we need to support that person. I don't care if you need sheets or whatever it is, buy them for your neighbor, buy them for the homeless shelter, do whatever. I say the same thing about you, Kevin. You've been knocked off Twitter. It is sickening. And if you want to know who to follow, look at who's being canceled, write them a check, do whatever you can, buy their products, share them on social media. I just feel like we're in a war and we're being treated like children. It's just unconscionable. And, you know, we haven't even talked about China and all that stuff, but what is happening in America is horrific. Give us some more specifics. We've just got a couple of minutes here on where people can go or what they can do.
Well, I'm grateful for that, Eric. And there were a lot of people that found me because of you during the election cycle. And yeah, praise I was 150,000 follower Twitter blue check. And they just, because they didn't like my criticism of them, just pulled the plug. Thankfully, a few thousand of your friends and mine have found me over at Parler. Parler is back up and running. They were able to get their servers liberated from the clutches of Amazon.
Did you just say Parler? I actually didn't know this. You're serious? Yeah.
No, Parler is back up and running. And Amazon had deplatformed them because they had housed their servers. And this is a problem that you're going to see with digital currency and a whole bunch of other things. If they get through with the idea of a digital currency, whoever hosts that digital platform is going to know every dollar you spend and where you spend it. I am so done with coddling the big tech and playing this game. So I'm thankful for free platforms, but I'm on Gab, I'm on Parler. You can still find Radio Night Live, my radio show, on Twitter. It's operated by my staff. And I'm glad to interact with anybody anywhere that they find me, but I'm going to speak up more consistently and louder than I ever have, because that was the late great Rush Limbaugh said: when they come for your speech, you have to scream louder. And that's what we have to do. We're in a day of desperation.
We're out of time, Kevin. We love having you. We'll have you next week or the week after. Continue conversation. God bless you, my friend.
Thank you.
Hey there, folks. How many years have I been telling you about Relief Factor? What, like four? The truth is, I know there are millions of people, in fact, some say over 100 million people, struggling with some kind of pain, maybe from exercise, just getting older. That could do it, getting older, which is why I am so impressed with Pete and Seth Talbot. They are on a mission. You rarely see this kind of focus and commitment. Seriously, they recently shared with me that they are doubling down and want to literally double their total number of happy customers in the next year. And I believe they'll do it. So here's the deal. If you're struggling with back, neck, shoulder, hip, or knee pain, even general muscle aches and pains, then I'm suggesting you order their 3-week quick start, still discounted to only $19.95, about a dollar a day, to see if we can get you out of pain too. And then after that, less than the cost of a cup of coffee a day to stay out of pain. Go to relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com, or call 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com, 800-500-8384. I use it. It works. Check it out.
Hey folks, Eric Metaxas here. Like you, I am sick of hearing about big tech companies spying on their customers, selling their data, and not being able to keep their platforms safe and secure. Luckily, I found SquadPod, a private platform that helps businesses, organizations, churches, and nonprofits take back control of their communication. SquadPod has three things going for it that other companies do not. First, SquadPod puts you in control of who is a part of your team, what they see, and how they interact with the group. Second, SquadPod is 100% owned and operated in the United States. Third, SquadPod is simple to use. Just create an account, invite your team, and start communicating via their secure video and messaging features. Learn more at squadpod.com/Eric. That's squadpod.com/Eric. Let me say it again, squadpod.com/Eric. Check it out. Hey there, folks. You've probably heard of the Me Too movement. You probably have mixed feelings about it because, like every good thing, it gets twisted into a pretzel. But we kind of think that the idea of men behaving like gentlemen is a good thing. And I don't mean in the Marxist enforced way that we're seeing in the culture where, you know, people just get thrown to the wolves and suddenly everyone who has ever been in the same room with them comes out of the woodwork and accuses them of looking at them funny. I'm talking about the real thing, how I as a father would want a young man to treat my daughter. This is really basic stuff. I've thought of writing about this for a long time, but sometimes God spares me by getting somebody else to write about it first. So we have right now, Douglas Lamb is my guest. He's the author of a new book called Men and #MeToo, How a Gentleman Treats Women. Doug, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Eric. I appreciate the invitation to be here. Do I need to refer to you as Eric Metaxas, nationally syndicated radio talk show host, or do I just call you Eric?
I prefer, I have 5 honorary doctorates. So if you don't mind, you don't have to do this, but it's proper etiquette for you to say Dr. Metaxas.
Okay.
Or you can just say D5, you know, whatever floats your boat. Look, you're in Texas. When I travel around the country, I notice that young men in places like Texas in the South, usually Christian young men, they really understand this idea of behaving like a gentleman. And not all, obviously, but I notice that young men seem to get this, that young women understand the idea of behaving in a ladylike fashion. It's a concept which has been lost largely in the culture, certainly in places like New York or the Northeast, where I have spent a lot of my life. People kind of don't get this. So what was it that prompted you to write this? And by the way, what is your background so that people understand who's this guy that wrote the book called Men and Hashtag Me Too?
My background, born in Hawaii. My dad was military, so we moved around a bit. Grew up in San Antonio, went to college at the University of Texas, did my master's at Southwestern Seminary, did my doctorate at Reformed Theological Seminary. So I guess, Eric, I'm D1. You'll be D5.
You're an actual doctor.
Yes,
because sir. I've got a rash on my midsection. I want to know if you can prescribe some kind of unguent. Nothing with steroids, but I'd really appreciate that. Maybe we'll talk offline. So look, okay, so what did you get your master's and doctorate in? How did I miss this one?
Systematic theology, basically, with biblical language studies.
Wow, but you're not in the ministry.
Yes, I'm a pastor.
Oh, but you are in the ministry. All right, you've got to see, some people have so many credentials that I don't know which one is like sticks out. So then you are a pastor, and you're in Midland, Texas, is that right?
Yes, sir. And I also, I run a nonprofit group called the Ethnos Group, which does international work.
I was going to bring that up, the Ethnos Group. And what does the Ethnos Group do?
Basically, it focuses on three things, Eric. We focused on training leadership around the world. As a pastor, I go and train Christian leaders. I can't mention some of the countries I go to, but I go to these different places and train these leaders and equip these leaders where it's desperately needed. We do work with orphans and widows. And then the Ethnos Group's goal is to eventually get enough funding to where we can help sponsor individuals that would like to participate or travel on some of these trips with us.
I love it. Well, the issue of how men should treat women is a big thing for me. It's something I seriously have thought about writing about. In my book, Seven Men and Seven More Men and Seven Women, I talk about these things a little bit, but you've written a book about it. So give us the basics. What do you say in Men and Hashtag Me Too, how a gentleman treats women?
Well, like you, I have a daughter. I think your daughter is about the age of my youngest daughter. And both of my daughters are based in New York. And as you said, that's not the place where men are probably doing the best job of treating women appropriately. And as my girls were moving out, as the Me Too movement was expanding, there was just something about what I was seeing, what I was reading that was breaking my heart. I was raised a particular way. I've been reading. I've been trained to understand personhood, you know, the creation mandate. Let us create man in our image. And God created men and women in his image. And so women bear the vestiges of the image of God, just as men do. And all life is to be respected. All life is sacred and needs to be honored. And it just began to hit home more and more, just the different things I began to see, the things I began to read, and just the way that some women let themselves be treated. I see the ugly side of humanity as a pastor on a regular basis, and it just breaks my heart. And God laid this book on my heart. And the six main ideas in the book, and I have a copy right here for self-aggrandizing promotion. It's the idea of respecting women, being faithful to the women in your life, having an attitude of humility. I think a lot of times there's a lot of pride and a lot of ego in men. That makes them have a condescending and a superior attitude towards women. And then, of course, then you move from the external to the internal, which is dealing with your thoughts, dealing with what you say, and then literally how you act. And
out against groping.
Absolutely.
You come yes. out. You come out. Albin, no groping, Albin. No, it's... it's just a funny thing because right now we're living in a time. I mean, look, I'm joking about this, but it's kind of it's an extraordinary thing because some people really understand this. And I think a lot of times people understand these things without even being aware of it. It's just how you were raised. You would never treat anyone like that, and especially a woman. But part of where we're broken as a culture, and I know you know this, is that once you step away from the biblical ideas about human beings and about men and women, you don't really see the healthy differences between men and women. You kind of act like everybody's the same. And when you act like everyone's the same, that creates problems. Obviously, in the military, you've got young women working alongside young men. And these things, if you don't really understand God's idea of what it is to be a man and God's idea of what it is to be a woman, it's just a big mess, basically. And so when you talk about how people will think about another member of the opposite sex and what they'll do, What do you see? I mean, as a pastor, you say, when How Gentleman Treats Women, what do you see men getting wrong? You know, now there's even good men who maybe would mean well, but they don't really understand some of these principles.
Yeah, Eric, that's a great question. I think it comes down to role models and examples that we've grown up with. Maybe you had one or two good examples, one or two good role models, but we've all had those bad role models. We've seen them maybe personally firsthand. We've heard about them. A distant relative, it's part of what we see in our culture and movies and television. But the other side of it is really grasping the concept of the creation mandate, that we see that we are both created in the image of God. And again, the real issue, as you know, as a Christian, is that it comes back to the issue of the heart. Jesus said, what flows out of the mouth comes from the heart. And what are the way we live our lives, the things we do are all an evidence of what's taking place inside. And fundamentally, I think a lot of men are just unwilling to deal with that transformation process. And that's what I'm trying to get at in the book. Here are six things to work on, guys. And I'm in no way perfect. I'm a beggar who found bread, and I'm trying to pass it out to other people. And so one of the things I drive at the end of the book is what I call the gentleman's agreement, where a guy reads the things I will do, the things I won't do regarding the six topics we cover, and then signs it and says, I'm going to move forward. And then I even call guys to accountability with other guys, calling them to meet together on a weekly basis where you can kind of hold each other accountable. How well are you doing? Well, I was very disrespectful to my wife, or I made a rude comment to one of the ladies I work with, or whatever it might be, just to try to help men sharpen each other's swords so they can be more effective, so they can be more gentlemanly, so they can stop acting like cavemen and start acting like gentlemen.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that part of the problem that we have in the culture right now is that when you drift away from the biblical idea, you can get things wrong in both directions, right? The devil doesn't care if you get things wrong on the caveman side or on the effeminate metrosexual side, where you don't, you know, in other words, there's something healthy about a man being strong. That's God's idea, but it's strength to be used in service, to protect. A lot of people I see in the culture, and you get this a lot in sort of feminist circles, that they think male strength is scary and bad. So they call it toxic masculinity, because they're looking at unredeemed strength. They're not looking at God's idea of strength, where he gives us a blessing to be used to bless others, a kind of servant leadership, but they see it simply as a threat. And then, of course, there are men who buy into that idea and who think that, you know, to be manly in any way is bad. So talk about that a little bit.
Well, it's such a mess right now with all of the LGBTQ and just sort of the melting down of the distinctions between what's male and what's female. It's almost to the point that my book will be a moot point in a while. And how can we even raise the Me Too issue, the sexual harassment issue, if, you know, there really is no maleness, there is no femaleness. But what it comes down to fundamentally to me, Eric, is the idea that some guys have bought into the toxic masculinity. Some guys, again, have had bad role models. They're not willing to deal with the issue. And so what happens is they just try to live out this concept of what it means to be a guy. And it comes back to what I said earlier, guys are unwilling to understand what real masculinity is. It's not completely found in my book, but it's out there.
I want to, we're obviously going to continue the conversation. Folks, don't go away. Thank you. Folks, I'm talking to Doug Lamb, who's the author of a new book, Men and Hashtag Me Too, How a Gentleman Treats Women. Doug, you were just saying that part of what we need is a healthy view of what it is to be a man and a healthy view of what it is to be a woman. And then if you don't have that, if you don't have God's idea of what that is, whether you got it from the Bible or just from the culture, because there are a lot of people who get good ideas just from the people they're around. They don't even know that this is God's idea. But you're saying that we're losing that in this culture, and that the LGBTQ movement has confused a lot of people about really what God's idea is of male and female.
Oh, absolutely. When you just begin to melt down the distinctions that God clearly lays out in Scripture, I mean, it says that God created a male and female. It doesn't say God created, you know, just this whole slew of letters. And I think people are buying into this notion, and they're looking for authority in things that are just subjective opinion of different individuals. And as that individual's opinion subsides, then the next one rises up. And so all of a sudden, we're at this place where we're building our understanding of masculinity, our understanding of personhood, based on just this ever-changing, ever-fluid concept that just sort of ebbs and flows, like you see in studies of philosophy. And this works, and the next school comes along and says, no, that doesn't work, and this is what's last. I think we need to go to the truth that's eternal, the truth that stands forever, and that's the truth that is based on God's word. And you can trust God's word. The word of God is trustworthy because the character of God is trustworthy. And the moral character of God doesn't change. Subsequently, the moral teachings and principles laid out in scripture of God do not change. And if people can grasp that idea of what biblical masculinity is and feminine masculinity, that's not right, biblical femininity is, then I think we can get back to a better balance on how we're supposed to interact with each other. And I think men will begin to grasp what it is to be strong and humble, to be strong and respectful, to be strong and faithful, to be a strong man without being obnoxious, without being overbearing, without being a caveman.
It's funny. I wrote three sort of children's books that are really like comedy books for adults called Donald the Caveman. And I, you know, to me, it's a joke that because there are caveman qualities that are good qualities, right? In other words, we're not talking about somebody abusing women and dragging them around by the hair. But it's a fascinating thing because in our culture, it's either one or the other. As we've been saying, either you get like abusive strength, which is genuine toxic masculinity, or you get this kind of feminized non-masculinity. And you see the same thing in women. They always talk about women's empowerment. Like anytime anything is like a cliche du jour or cliche of the decade, you know something's wrong. People talk about women's empowerment. You think, what does that mean? Why is it so important? And it's because women feel like, well, we've been abused, we've been stepped on, so we need to be strong. And you think, well, is that really the answer so much? You're supposed to have dignity. You're supposed to have self-respect, which is a kind of strength, but you don't need to be like kicking butt like the jerks you're criticizing. The whole idea is that we're supposed to have God's idea of who he says that I am. And I think part of the Me Too movement, you know, part of it is healthy where women are saying like, that's inappropriate. We would all say that, right? And yet, when it becomes kind of culturally enforced, it gets creepy. Now they try to codify it that if you do this or you do that, or you look in this, you look at somebody funny, you know, you're going to be disciplined. And you think that's sort of, I often see that as missing the point.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. It doesn't need to come from some kind of external law or rule that's imposed on us. It needs to come from within ourselves and motivated by ourselves. You mentioned earlier that you come to the South and you see gentlemen treating women like they should be treated. I think one of the other issues, Eric, that maybe is out there is in the realm of Christianity, trying to understand and get a biblical idea of masculinity has been lost when you look at the way Jesus is portrayed in not all, but so many of the films. It's this pasty, skinny, effeminate British guy. You know, he's sitting there, yay, verily, yay. And he's out there doing his thing. And you look to Jesus as a role model of manhood. And we need to stop and think about Jesus as a role model. He was a carpenter. So he was probably very muscular. He's probably very strong. We need to remember that he was not just some kind of effeminate little pasty guy floating around, you know, whispering good moral ideas. And as we study, as we understand what it means to be a man based on the teachings of scripture, what we can understand about Christ, we understand he was fully human, he was fully God. And we need to try to put those two together. It seems like Christians err on one side or the other. And if we can blend those two concepts together of the divinity of Christ and the humanity of Christ, which it's not an easy thing because, you know, 100% and 100%, you know, in our mind is doesn't work. And so when we put those together, we get a better understanding of the masculinity of Christ, which would then allow us to do a better job of understanding what real masculinity is and move away from a toxic masculinity.
It's funny. I was talking, I don't know if it was yesterday on this program, but I was saying that like Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York, has gotten in all this trouble recently. And it actually cuts both ways. In other words, here's a guy who I would say is horrible on many major levels and probably obviously has a view of marriage and women and everything that I disagree with. But it's now gotten to a point where people start piling on. And so at some wedding, he evidently approached a young woman. It says put his hand on her lower back.
tried to kiss her or asked her if he could kiss her or something like that. And they act like it was practically date rape or something. And I think this is just madness. Can't we have a healthy view of things and say, hey, maybe that wasn't a good idea or whatever, maybe because of his age. But people seem unwilling to make commonsensical distinctions between really horrible behavior and behavior that you just say, well, it was inappropriate or it was wrong, but it wasn't wrong in a way that the tabloids need to report on it. It was just, you know, I find myself defending Andrew Cuomo. I'm not defending Andrew Cuomo, but I'm just trying to think like we don't really have common sense anymore. We kind of go all in this direction or all in this direction. We're going to be right back, folks. I'm talking to Doug Lamb. The book is Men and Me Too, How a Gentleman Treats Women.
There's talk on the street.
Hey there, folks. I'm talking to Doug Lamb, author of the book Men and Me Too, How a Gentleman Treats Women. Doug, I was just saying that, you know, when we follow the culture and we don't follow God's ideas, the culture not many decades ago was the antithesis of Me Too. It was just sex with anybody. I mean, you think of the 60s and the 70s, the idea was really so gross that when you think about how we suddenly now in this kind of neo-Puritanism think about, the Me Too issue, all these Me Too issues were non-issues a few decades ago. And so you think like, well, why do we careen from one pole to the other pole? What is God's idea of how men and women should get together and treat each other? Did you say that there are six examples or six principles in your book? Can we go through those?
Sure, absolutely. I wrote the book, and you know how this is. I wrote the book 2 years ago and finally got it published last year. It's the issue of respect. A gentleman is respectful. That means the idea that you will respect a woman, her presence, her body, just everything about her. You will be humble as you interact with women. Just the different things you hear about guys having condescending attitudes. Women, you know, go get me my coffee, whatever it might be.
And I think that could be summed up in don't be a jerk.
Yeah, well, the whole book could be summed up in don't be a jerk,
don't
really.
Don't be a jerk, yeah.
Yeah, and the another issue that is important is the issue of humility. And I think a lot of men struggle with, maybe it's the testosterone in us, I don't know what it is, but the issue of humility has to be an important part of who we are. It has to be woven through the fabric of our soul. And I think a lot of guys resist that. I think they see humility as weakness, where biblically the concept is humility is strength that is controlled and directed.
If you have a real sense of self-respect and a real sense of your own strength, then you have a confidence that allows you to have humility. And
yes.
If you are insecure about who you really are and you don't know that God declares that you are made in his image and amazing on every level, if you don't know that, you will be insecure and you will express it in ways that are the opposite of humility. I mean, that's what accounts for it. Okay, so you've got a number of other ones. I want you to get through all these because these are very important.
Sure. The next one is what we think, because oftentimes what we say and what we actually do first starts in the mind. It starts with what's going on in our thought process. If we think something's acceptable, then we'll say it. If we think it's acceptable, we will act on it. If we can transform our mind, change the way we think about things, recognize that we need to set boundaries, we need to set filters over our words, and begin to think in different thinking patterns, that will then impact the way we speak. And that's the other item. We've got to control our words. We can't just get an idea or get a feeling and just articulate that. Hey, lady, you sure look, you know, and then say what we want to say. Lady walks down the street, start doing the cat calls and the whistling and the hollering. And
wait a minute, that's wrong?
Eric,
just kidding. You know, I just find it so funny. If I ever see anybody do that, I'm like, I'm baffled because no men that I grew up with would even dream of that. Like, I just think to myself, what is that? Like low life behavior. What is that? Where did you get the idea that that was okay? But obviously, you know, some people get the idea that that's okay, which I just find, you know, strange. But anyway, okay. So no catcalling. I think we
no catcalling. Yeah. I live in a state where we're apparently now all Neanderthals because I live in Texas. But really, the catcalling, in my opinion, you see someone do that, that is really an example of Neanderthal, in my opinion. The guy who just sits there and hollers at a woman and makes crude comments. And then the last one, of course, is actions. It's you know, inappropriately touching, rubbing up against, brushing up against, making some kind of sexual contact that you just need for some kind of sense of control. And it's those six principles that if guys will zero in on those six, and I'm sure there are more, and there's another book that could be written, I'm sure. But if guys will zero in on those six ideas, those principles, I think we can transform the way we behave. And you made a comment a minute ago about the issue of insecurity. I think a lot of what's going on is rooted in that insecurity too. I think when people aren't secure on what they believe, what they know, what they understand about themselves, I think it applies to politics. I think it applies to social issues. People begin to fight and to argue and to just bow up. And I think a lot of guys dealing with their insecurities of their manhood have then in turn come back and try to assert themselves by saying, okay, look what I'm going to do to this gal. Look what I'm going to say to this gal. Look how I treat women. I will make myself feel bigger by making other people feel smaller.
I mean, again, most people, I think, would know that that's sick. That's really sick. But there are people who don't. And that's why those of us who can model correct behavior, you know, it's actually very, very important that we do that, especially for young men, I think.
Exactly.
But young women also need to be surrounded by men who behave like that so that they will know right away if a young man is not behaving that way or any man is not behaving that way. Like, that's not right. That's my father. Yeah. Doesn't behave that way. My brother doesn't behave that way. The people around us don't behave that way. It's very important, I think, because as you said, there are women who will allow themselves to be treated poorly. And you think, where did they ever get the idea that that was appropriate?
Yeah, well, that was their example probably from their mother or an aunt or an older sister or something. And it's this chain that we've got to break, these cycles that need to be broken of giving poor treatment and receiving poor treatment. And the book is written towards men. Hopefully with men being able to make an understanding of how they need to change. But women can read this book and walk away and go, oh, this is what I should expect. It gives them maybe a standard that maybe some women have never been exposed to. And hopefully women will read this book and go, I'm not going to respond to that. I'm going to wait for respect. I'm going to wait for, you know, for being treated properly, for faithfulness, all of that's in the book.
Well, this is really, really important stuff. I assume we can get the book practically anywhere. The title is, once again, Men and Me Too. Men
right now,
and
it's
Me
just
Too.
At Amazon.
Okay, How a Gentleman Treats Women. Doug Lamb, if people want to find you, I guess they can go to ethnosgroup.com. Is there another way?
They could search our church website.
What's the church?
It is Fannin Baptist. What a strange name. It's the name of the subdivision area, Fannin. Baptist.
Fannin Baptist. And you're in the Midland area.
Yes, sir.
Can
yes,
anything
sir.
Good come out of Midland except oil?
Well, my book. How about that?
And your book.
And
I forgot
book.
About that. But when I
There's
learned
a lot of
when
good people here.
When I realized that I'm in the Permian Basin, I thought I really learned something. I've never been in any kind of a basin that I was aware of, but this is where the oil comes from. How many years have you been there?
I've been pastoring at this church 29 years.
Whoa. Unbelievable. All right. Well, Doug Lamb, congratulations on the book, folks. It's Men and Me Too, How a Gentleman Treats Women. Very important idea. Doug Lamb, God bless you.
Well, thank you, Eric, for having me. I appreciate it.
Folks, I want to remind you before we go to Kevin McCullough or return to Kevin McCullough, we are doing a fundraiser with Food for the Poor. Some people say, hey, Eric, how can I call to give? First of all, you can go to MetaxasTalk.com. You know the drill, MetaxasTalk.com. But I want to give this phone number out. Because some people can give this way. $37 helps a kid for 6 months, feeds a kid for 6 months. This is in Honduras right now, which is where Food for the Poor is. They've had horrible,
horrible. Just so devastating. It's so amazing. There's tremendous poverty, tremendous, all kinds of problems. They get hit by a tropical storm, devastating, followed by a hurricane, more devastating, flooding, crops are destroyed. Huge problems. And so Food for the Poor is a great organization. So here's the phone number, 844-860-HOPE, 844-860-HOPE, 844-860-HOPE. I hope you'll give, everybody who gives is entered in a drawing for a grand prize, which is amazing. Actually, there are five grand prizes. They're all equally amazing. It's the same grand prize. And it is. It's fantastic. I just did a Trump thing with my hands there. But Albin, I want to say also, I keep saying this, but we're trying to get all my books available at mystore.com. That's Mike Lindell's website. Mike's standing right behind me. He's saying, use the code Eric. Mystore.com. carries most of my books now, but not all of them, but we're going to try to get all of them on there because, you know, with Amazon shutting down Parler, canceling books, I have friends of mine whose books have been taken off of Amazon. Mm-hmm. Why? Amazon carries Mein Kampf. Did you know that? You think there's hate speech in there? Maybe. I don't know. It was written, I believe, by Adolf Hitler. He's a young up and coming writer. Adolf Hitler. He wrote a book called Mein Kampf. It's carried on Amazon, but they've canceled my friend Ryan Anderson because he has a book talking about the transgender stuff. We're living in weird times. And as I say, because of that, I'm on more media platforms now. We're on Rumble. Follow us on Rumble, not just on YouTube. But mypillow.com has an ancillary site called mystore.com. And I'm just saying, if you want to get the books at a actually, in most cases, a really great price, go to mypillow.com. If you put in the code Eric, the price is like some of them, it's insane. Like the Miracles book and the Seven Women book, the price is it's insane. It's less than half, whatever. But I just want to say that because I want to encourage people. First of all, I want to support Mike Lindell because he is a hero. And when somebody gets canceled and treated the way he's been treated, we need to step up and to support them. It's just not right. It's simply not right. Even if you don't agree with him, you shouldn't be treated that way in America for saying something like he's been saying. It's simply wrong. So I want to encourage you to go to mypillow.com, use code Eric, mystore.com, use code Eric. And again, most of my books are available at mystore.com. And we'll have more of them available there over time. We're running out of time, Albin.
Yeah, I just want to mention something real quick because people are always looking for something really great to watch. We always suggest you go to salemnow.com, use the code Eric, 20% off there. But they've got great new movies. One's called Watch. It's called America's Forgotten. Sorry, America's Forgotten, about the broken immigration system. If that's not in the news right now.
America's Forgotten. Okay, yes. So that's salemnow.com, salemnow.com, salemnow.com. And I think you also use the code Eric there, right, to save 20%?
That is correct, Eric. Eric, everywhere you go, at MyPillow, at my store, Eric, everywhere.
By the way, we should say salemnow.com. There's all kinds of stuff there. And people are looking for something wholesome and positive and good and whatever. Go to salemnow.com. Use the code Eric. Or when we come back, that crazy Kevin. You remember Kevin? Vote Sudamas, Kevin McCullough? Yeah, that's the guy.